Hey, good morning, guys. So as she said, I'm Jeff Kelfit. I'm one of the chief architects at General Motors, as well as I manage a team of strategy and architects. Jumping in, so a little bit about GM. So a lot of people say, oh, you deployed Azure RMS and this and that. What's the big deal? It's our scale that makes it really hard. So over 200,000 employees. We have kind of all types of data you can imagine from all these proprietary systems. We've got super confidential information that people in other countries would love to have, our competitors would love to have, so we need to protect that, whether it's a RFP or design or engineering data. So a lot of intellectual property that runs our business. We have a lot of kind of risk scenarios that we're really concerned about our competitors getting data, and it's a real life thing. So we have a whole team of people that's looking for employees leaking data, either accidentally or intentionally, executives kind of doing things that they shouldn't do, sending stuff to personal emails, all that kind of stuff. There's a whole team that's kind of ensuring that GM's data is protected at all times. So what we were really looking for was a way to have secure collaboration with our users, and we're really focused on kind of the day-to-day stuff, right? Because there's a lot of third-party tools that are kind of hard to use, they don't integrate, but we wanted something that, you know, essentially everyone in the company could leverage. And a big part of it too was kind of the external piece. We had ADRMS already, it worked internally, but there was a lot of limitations, we'll say, with kind of the legacy technology, because ADRMS has been around, you know, for 10, 15 years, and not a really a whole lot had changed. So we were kind of looking for the next thing, as well as to add some of that mobile support, right? So Microsoft is, you know, all with mobile, so is GM, so it's just part of our day-to-day business. So a bit of information about GM. We've got over 170 vehicle assemblies, stamping plants, tool and die, battery manufacturing places kind of all over the globe. We've do over 65,000 tons of material, and 29,000 outbound vehicles are shipped every single day. We have over 21,000 dealerships, and we sell about 10 million vehicles a year. We've got 7 million OnStar subscribers, over 200,000 employees, and 396 facilities, speaking more than 50 languages in 23 time zones, and we produce vehicles in 30 countries and conduct business in 140 countries. So just, you know, basically anywhere in the world, we're doing business, right? So just a massive scale. And if we look at some of the numbers, there's over 11,000 full-time GM employees that run in IT. We've got two brand new enterprise data centers. We have around 3,000 in-house applications, and a lot of those are kind of tier one, tier two applications. Each month, we have over 100 million emails, 60 million IM conversations, 600,000 soft phone calls, 20,000 video calls, 58 million WebEx meeting minutes, over 100,000 PCs, Macs, over 60,000 mobile devices, 35,000 workstations for our engineers, and about 400 video collaboration rooms in 31 countries. So as you can imagine, there's a lot to make it all work, and a lot of it is around scalability. Because a lot of the solutions that are out in the market, they might work for 20,000 or 50,000 or 75,000 people, but the scale just has to be there. And we're continuing to grow. We're hiring in IT. We're hiring in the business. We're constantly innovating. So the solutions need to get, you know, as big as they are with a lot more room to grow. So kind of what we looked at was, the challenge for GM was, how do we have a mobility-first mindset, be able to save our data, make sure it's secure, make sure people can access it to do their jobs, and enable that they can share it when they need to, right? So both within GM and outside of GM. So the solution that we were looking at was EMS, and that's Enterprise Mobility Suite. And we looked at it for a number of reasons. One was Intune. For mobile device management. The other was around Azure Active Directory and then rights management. So because of these key pieces, they really helped us kind of one, get off some old solutions that weren't really well integrated and allow us to kind of take advantage of the scale of all these products together. So there's a reason they sell these products together, and it's because they work so well together. So kind of what our intentions are is we want our employees to kind of label and classify the data, and then we know what their data is, and we don't have to guess. IT doesn't have to say, well, can we dispose of this or not, or we got to take it to legal, or the business owner, but they left 3 years ago. We want our employees to classify the data when they create it or when they save it, so we don't have to do the guesswork later. And we also want it to be intelligent enough that if something is confidential or something is secret, that the data is protected accordingly, right? So saying it's a secret, you know, that almost puts a bigger bullseye on it, right? So if you put protection on it as well, that's really kind of the key part of it as well for our employees. So really at the end of the day, we kind of increased our security. We actually made it pretty easy for our end users to leverage this technology. We made sure that the documents and emails and things like that were protected both inside and outside the organization. We also ensured that the data was stayed on-prem. That was also important to us because we looked at a lot of different products that protected data, and they were cloud-based solutions, but you were sending those files out to the cloud to be encrypted, and then they come back. For rights management, it's not, right? So it's just the key exchange in the cloud, but the actual files stay on your PCs or on your Exchange servers or on your SharePoint servers. So that was a really critical piece for us as well. And then just support a wide variety of files, right? So we get that, you know, a lot of people can do PDF or they can do Word documents, but can they do both? Can they do kind of regular files and do, you know, generic protection, right? Are the vendors working with other vendors to do integration? So those are kind of the key things that we were looking at. And as we started to talk to Microsoft, it was clear that they were pushing the envelope on the integration with the other vendors, and that's key to us. And they, you know, they kind of flat out said, hey, who do you work with? We want to work with those companies. You know, you lean on them and we'll lean on them and we'll get that integration that you guys want, right? We have an API and it's been successful for us, right? Because we have key types of files that GM works with. So we've gone ahead and, you know, had that integration. And then at the end of the day, it's kind of around visibility and control, right? So we know that people will protect stuff, but we also know that litigation is going to have to happen, right? So we'll have to kind of remove that protection if something needs to go to the legal team or there's a subpoena or whatever it is. We want to know kind of what our employees are doing and be able to control it effectively. So the big thing for us, as I kind of talked about before, was that whole integrated solution, right? So as we started to go down this path, this was kind of GM's first piece of, we'll say, Office 365 and Azure was EMS, right? And so we started, you know, kind of the pieces of Azure AD and Intune and kind of said, okay, let's see how things go. And then, okay, it went well, so let's roll on the rights management on top of it. And we found out that they really do work together quite well. And we found that things like, you know, the Azure Active Directory, we thought, okay, it's just a prerequisite to start working with this Microsoft Cloud stuff, but it really is the base for, you know, all the Office 365 and all the Azure components, as well as even some of the third parties, right? So you look at Adobe and other vendors, they're saying, you know, well, we're not going to do our own thing. We'll just plug into your synced directory, right? So it's becoming kind of commonplace. That's making it easier for us to leverage this kind of core infrastructure that we've stood up. We were also looking for kind of a single management environment and policy environment for all of these solutions, right? So we didn't want to have to create policies in all these different tools and solutions, so we could create it in one place, and we could even take what we've already created with ADRMS and just import it. So we didn't have to kind of rebuild and re-engineer all this. We were just able to bring it back in. The next piece was around secure sharing. So we had internal sharing with ADRMS. But it was pretty limited, right? So if it was Word, Excel, PowerPoint, it worked great. If it was anything else, not so great. So for us, it was the ability to share other types of files inside and outside with our suppliers, with our vendors, because there's a lot of stuff that GM sends out, like say a proposal or a bid or things like that, that we want to make sure that, hey, it goes to the Bob at Bosch and not Bob at Johnson Controls, right? And so when people are quickly firing off emails, did they send it to the right person? Do they protect the file, things like that? So we want to make sure that, you know, people are doing it and these teams have integrated it into their day-to-day work just to make sure that they're kind of protecting GM as a whole. And then the last piece is around kind of the visibility and control. So we have, you know, the ability to look at the logging to see what users are doing. If there's questions of, you know, hey, are they using the tools appropriately? And then also kind of the control of the data, because at the end of the day, IT necessarily doesn't have the keys to decrypt all these documents. Specific folks in legal and other groups do have those keys, right? So it's simple to integrate to where, you know, basically you set up an AD group and you assign the rights to this group, and then people that are members of these groups in these legal and compliance and security groups can decrypt documents when they need to, right? Whether it's ad hoc for a security investigation or it's a bulk decryption for an e-discovery type scenario. So it's been good so far. So kind of what I thought I'd do is, rather than kind of go through a whole bunch of slides, I would talk through a bit of how our experience went, right? It's probably more interesting to you guys anyway. So a little history, I guess, is we started with Lotus Notes, and it actually wasn't that long ago that we were still on Lotus Notes. Within Notes, there was kind of a do not forward-ish feature. I say ish because it didn't really work in all scenarios. If Notes to Notes, it worked okay, but mobile to Notes, web mail to Notes, But it was kind of like the, hey, you shouldn't do this, and people kind of said, okay, but there were ways around it, right? So we had that feature, and people had used it, and our executives and HR and other groups said, hey, you know, you guys went to Exchange and Outlook, that's cool, but where's that do not forward thing? So we looked at kind of doing something custom. We said, no, this is probably going to be a bad idea. So we deployed ADRMS. And so ADRMS had its challenges. It was a stable product, but there wasn't much innovation. It was kind of like this thing that was in the corner. And no one really used it because it was super expensive. So we have an enterprise license agreement with Microsoft. So we said, sure, we'll deploy it. So we had two clusters. We had one for OnStar, one for our corporate users. And we deployed it to every single person in the company. The big usage was the do not forward. We also deployed some kind of employee-only templates to make sure that something didn't go to a supplier or a joint venture, things like that. We had limited usage, right? So we had people using do not forward quite a bit, but outside of that, they didn't really get it. They didn't understand the idea. It was a little clunky, right? So you go to Word, file, information, protect, and then you check a box and you gotta like type in someone's email address and it doesn't use the GAL unless you click this button and you hit drop downs for a whole bunch of settings, and yeah, it wasn't great. So our users didn't really embrace it much. So we knew that, you know, Azure Rights Management was coming. So we had talked to Microsoft and said, hey, look, we get this new product's coming, but it's not out yet. And you guys aren't even willing to share with it. What do we need to do to kind of future-proof it? So they said the one big thing that we'd recommend is use a Talus HSM, because then when you have this environment with the Talus keys, you generate your keys in this Talus HSM, you'll be able to migrate it to Azure whenever this solution's available that we're still building. So we said, okay, we'll buy the Talus HSMs, we'll generate the keys for ADRMS in there, and we'll talk to you in a year or two when this thing's done. So we did that, and we were kind of okay. And then when we were talking more about, okay, how does GM kind of take it to the next step for mobility, that's when we started to seriously consider Intune. And then when we started to look at Intune, it said, okay, we need Azure AD, and then, oh, this next generation of rights management is included as well. So let's take a look at it. Got fired up in the lab, and we're like, wow, this is really cool, right? So this has a lot of features we've been wanting, and it made it an easy choice for us to kind of go down that path. So kind of where we went next was we had to build kind of the foundation to use EMS, right? So we had to clean up our directory. We had to sync AD, the users, the groups. We went with a federated model because we weren't super excited about syncing our passwords. So we started there and figured we could add the passwords later. We had to set up all the user licensing, which doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you've got hundreds of thousands of employees, just the logic alone of trying to figure out, you know, hey, you know, he gets a license, but she doesn't, based on who's active, who's not, what country are they in, you know, what's export compliance, what's this, what's that. There was quite a bit of work that went into just getting that little checkbox, right? So I think the engineer on my team who created this, he's got like 20,000 lines of PowerShell code to do all this work around the license checking and revocation and assignment. So there was a ton of work that went in to make the licensing a key piece of it. So okay, we did that. And then you had to do the ADFS integration, you had to set up the federation with Microsoft, kind of all that stuff. We started down the Intune path first, started to get all that set up, got mobile devices enrolled, and then we kind of moved into RMS. So what was kind of the process once we started RMS, right? So the activation was super easy, right? So you log in Office 365, you say, I want to turn on RMS, and it's done. That's it. It was super easy. But it was all the other stuff that made it hard. So things like moving on to those Talos HSMs that I talked about before. When we go to import the keys, the bring your own key process, there wasn't a whole lot of people that had done yet. So there was Microsoft had tested in the lab. We had tested it in the lab, and we said, okay, we'll follow these steps. But there were some challenges there, right? Because we were like one of the first companies to do it. So that was a little more time-consuming than we expected. But it seems like they've kind of figured it out as we've rebuilt it in the lab multiple times. It's been a lot easier. But it was kind of a foreign concept, right? Most people aren't generating keys on-prem and kind of importing them and Talos to Talos kind of exchanges. It even started out as in the beginning, you had to like get on an airplane to carry your keys out to a Microsoft data center. We beta tested the kind of do it over the internet process. But getting those keys is kind of hard, actually. So my team used to do the kind of all the PKI certificate management, things like that. So I knew the Talos infrastructure very well. And there's a lot of separation of duties, right? So people who have access to the data centers don't have access to the servers. People who have access to the Talos HSM don't have access to any of the other two. So, right, so you need this big committee of people to get in. Like, okay, I'm a key holder to the HSM, and I can log into, and this other guy can log into the server, and she can open the door for us, and he can open the safe for us. And you get all these people in, and then, oh, yeah, you need 5 out of the 7 for the quorum of the key holders. So it was this big, elaborate event to get it, but it's more than just RMS for us, right? We have, you know, master encryption keys for things like, you know, the vehicle modules and OnStar and this and that. So there's a reason why it's so hard to get all this, you know, get to these keys. So we did all that, and then we imported the templates. We created the kind of similar AD groups for us, so the all employees groups, kind of move those into Azure, and then we said, okay, how do we test it? So we started looking at kind of our base GM build of PCs, right? And we said, okay, you know, Windows 7, Office 2013 was where we were at. Does it work? Well, it fails right away. That's kind of weird. So we're checking it out and like, okay, you need this patch, which has this prerequisite in Office, and you need this Windows patch. And we kind of compiled this whole list. And after we got to all the dependencies, we said, wow, this is a lot of patches. It was like almost 700 megs of patches. So if you can imagine trying to get 700 megs down to over 100,000 PCs, it's going to take some time, even with a good network, right? Especially the remote links. And on top of that, there's some reg keys you need to do if you're already using RMS to kind of switch you from on-prem to the cloud. There's some other PowerShell scripts to kind of clean things up from the PC, delete the caches and the licenses and things like that. The good thing is they were already built, didn't require a whole lot of customization, which was nice for us. But we still had to kind of package it all together, test it, validate it. You know, we've got different builds, you know, that whole process, right? So, okay, we did that. PC's done. It's working pretty well. Package is a little big, but, you know, we can live with that. So then we moved on to Macs. So with ADRMS, you had support with Office 2011. With Azure RMS, there is no support for Office 2011. But it worked. I don't know why. It's not supposed to work. The support people say, we don't know why this works. Probably the bring your own key thing. So I will say in our, you know, it worked for us. It's not supposed to work. It's not supported. So take that with you, Will. But so we focused on Office 2016. And it was supposed to just work out of the box, no big deal. But the product was still beta at the time. So we tested it and didn't work. And we find out, oh, the RMS pieces weren't coded yet. So okay, we'll wait till it's a real product and we'll test again. So Office 2016 GAs, and then it works as expected. We had a few issues with certificates. Essentially, the Macs didn't like the older SHA-1 certificates in part of the ADFS infrastructure that hadn't been upgraded yet. So we kind of worked through that piece, but for the most part, Office 2016 on a Mac has been pretty stable. So then the next piece was around mobile. So we knew there was an RMS sharing app that we wanted to test out and deploy. We knew that there was support for some mobile phones for email, for like things like Do Not Forward. So we have a big population of Samsung devices for Android, and those work great. The support's already built in. You don't need to deploy any software or anything to the phone for kind of rights-protected emails. It just works really well. iOS, yeah, it's not a great story right now. So if our users get a Do Not Forward email, they get an error message. It's a lot better with Azure RMS than it was with ADRMS. ADRMS used to tell them they needed to download Outlook, and so they're like, huh, what? Azure RMS at least says, hey, your device can't, you know, use this type of message, open it up on your computer. So I've heard from my friends in the product group that they're working on a solution to address that. So hopefully that will kind of make it a little easier on on the iOS side. What we've seen thus far looks very promising, so those users can, you know, open that information on a mobile device. So that's kind of key for our environment, because if you look at it, you know, I have an iPhone, so when someone on my team sends me a rights-protected email from HR or whatever, I want to be able to open it, and I think other people just expect that it'll work too. So it seems like it's close, kind of the fix for that, so we're anticipating that, but just something to kind of keep in mind. And then the last piece of it was the Office mobile apps, right? So Word, Excel, PowerPoint, things like that. The integration with RMS is great in all those apps on iOS and Android, so if you use the native viewer to review a rights-protected, you know, Word document or whatever, it's not going to work. But if you have Word, Excel, PowerPoint on iOS or Android, it just works, right? So they log in for the first time to activate it, but it uses those same credentials, so they don't have to, like, re-log in or anything like that. It just opens kind of automatically, which is really good for the end users. So, you know, they may call in and say, hey, I can't open this document on my phone. Why not? We say, well, go download this app, and then it works, and then they're happy. So just kind of a little piece there to know about. So then the next piece was around the connector. So we have on-prem Exchange and SharePoint still, so we knew we needed a connector to be able to get that traffic that thought it was ADRMS out to the cloud. So it's been pretty easy. We got a script off TechNet, we did some minor customizations for it, but again, it was pretty much pre-built, which was nice for us. So we have some minor config on the rights management connector servers. We had a really easy load balancer setup. There really aren't a whole lot of guidelines. Just set it up to do, you know, round robin or least active connections or really whatever you want, and go. So pretty easy for us. We had some issues around, we've got a web proxy for all PCs and servers and things like that. So a little bit of work to kind of get our proxy team to allow these servers out to Azure. But aside from that, it's been pretty straightforward. And it's actually good for us because we'd rather the connector servers reach out to Azure than every single one of our Exchange and SharePoint servers. So the connector infrastructure has actually worked out pretty well for us. So, okay, we've done all the technical stuff. We've got deployed to everyone. The servers are all set up. What about adoption? So the biggest thing that we found is, you know, like, well, what's RMS? What's DRM? What are these things you're talking about? It's not a very common concept that people understand, you know, what the software can do. So we also had, we have like a group that will do end user testing and kind of find out, you know, what's the good and the bad about a GUI for an application or things like that. They're like, why is there 7 ways to do one thing, right? So if I protect a document, I can right-click it and I can hit share protected, or protect in place, I can do share protected, I can do it the old way. You know, why are there 12 different ways to do it? And, you know, everyone just assumes that all the protection's the same. So what we found is that people learned how to do it one way and assumed that they were covered for all scenarios. So an example would be, they were using Do Not Forward before, and that would protect Office documents, but it wouldn't protect like a PDF. So they'd send the email, and they just assumed that it was protected. Or then they would do Share Protected, and they would assume the email was protected and not just the attachment. So we said, okay, we need to figure out how. You know, at first we said, okay, we'll create this matrix, and if you need to do this, then you do that. And like, wait, never mind, no one's going to do that. So we did it based on scenarios, and that worked really well for our end users. So if I need to protect the email and the attachments, do this. If I need to protect only the attachments, but I don't care about the contents of the email, do this. And so we've shared that with our end users, and that clicked, and that's made adoption a lot better, because then they're not like, here's how to use the tool, it's here's how do I apply it to my job. And so that's been really powerful for our end users. We also looked at we'll say a campaign, if you will, to drive up adoption. So we have all these great tools, but unless people use them, kind of what's the point, right? So we have a campaign internally, it's called Work Smarter. We're pushing on how to better use the tools for, say, you know, even things like Outlook and SharePoint and OneNote. So as part of that campaign, we're putting in RMS, right, and how to take advantage of it and how to use it to be effective at your job, because we've got a lot of groups that are really excited about it, like our purchasing department. They love it, right? HR, they love it. But then other groups like finance, they maybe don't know what it is because they're not really using it yet. So this will help get it really out to the business in all the different areas. And this campaign is sponsored by some of the top executives in our company. So people actually read those emails rather than the ones from IT. So if you can kind of do something like that, it shows the importance to the company, and it's not just an IT email, and so people don't read it with the delete key. So that's definitely been kind of powerful, and we're looking forward to kind of that additional marketing, if you will, to get people to use it. Because at the end of the day, when we deployed Azure RMS to them, or even AD RMS, most people don't know, right? There isn't like a new application that shows up in the start menu or an icon on their desktop. It's just an icon in their office ribbon, right? So kind of that adoption has been super key for us. So next steps for us are really looking at kind of the next generation of the software, right? So the Azure Information Protection, right? So we want to be able to classify all documents upon creation, right? So you guys have seen it. You've probably tested it. So we're really going there. We have a good process today for kind of what the definition of what a secret document is, what a classified document is, what's public, things like that. So we're going to adopt those policies or those rules, if you will, and put them into the software, and it aligns really well with our business. So we're excited kind of once that becomes a full-fledged product that we will kind of take that to the next step for our deployment. I think with that as well, taking advantage of the kind of automated policies and protection is also going to be key to us as well, because right now everything's driven by the user for the most part. But we're looking forward to the, hey, someone puts credit card numbers or a secret string of part number that we don't want to share or whatever it is, and it'll just be automatically protected, but make the user aware that it's been protected, right? And so that's key, because if we just start doing it in the back end, kind of like DLP and some of the other tools do, then it's frustrating for them because, like, well, why did you block my email? Or why did you do this? Or why did you do that? This at least will kind of pop up and say, hey, we've reclassified your document because of this, and allow the user to say, hey, you know, cool computer, you think it's this, but it's really not, and they can kind of declassify it as well. So it allows the good flexibility. So we're really looking forward to that, and our security and compliance groups are super excited about it as well. And I think another thing, too, is around templates. So we have a handful of templates today. They're kind of big, broad, overarching templates that we know our users can take advantage of. But there's been a lot of desire to say, hey, I want a finance-only template, or I want an HR-only template, or I want, you know, legal within this small set of group and this one guy's vertical type thing. So we want to be able to do that, but we also want to make sure that we don't publish a zillion templates out to everyone, because then when you select a drop-down and there's 78 of them in there, people are going to say, all right, forget it, I'm not using it. So the scoped templates and automatic protection based on those templates are, I think, kind of the next iteration for us that's going to be key. We're also looking at working with specific business units. So I mentioned before that we've got some groups that love it. Other groups don't really know about it. And we find that if we spend some time with some of the leaders in those different areas, you know, they're like, oh, this is super cool. We can do this. We can do that. So our focus is to kind of go one more layer deep, right? So we've hit most of the big areas, and the ones that are interested have adopted it. Other ones have said, yeah, for my business, it's probably not super critical. It's kind of like going another layer down, because there could be people inside these different orgs. And as I mentioned, there's hundreds of thousands of employees. So just because one guy told us no, we've got an option to tell it to someone else. So that's going to be another piece that's definitely important for us. Another one, too, for us is the app integration. So obviously, Office is our biggest use case for a lot of our information workers. But we do a lot of work with Siemens and other big vendors on some of the proprietary tools we use. They're industry standard, but they drive our business, right? At the end of the day, you know, Word documents aren't our key thing. It's engineering, right? So we want to get that integration with those suppliers. And you know, we've been working with the product group from Microsoft. We've been leaning on our other vendors, and they're interested, right? It's not like it's pulling teeth. These vendors get that, hey, these CAD drawings are super sensitive, and other customers are going to want to protect it, and Microsoft is interested in integrating with these other parties. So it's kind of been like, you know, you two talk and let us know when it's ready. And it's been working pretty well so far for us. The last piece for us is the DLP and security tool integration. So we don't use the Microsoft DLP tools and things like that. We use other products. So we're working with those third parties to get that integration. You've got the concern that someone could RMS something, send it out externally to the, you know, another, we'll say, corporate account, right? Because you can't send it to a Gmail account with their own domain. And it's right now just an encrypted blob that kind of goes across the wire, right? So the vendors are working on that integration for DLP, but we want to make sure that, you know, these tools can reach in and make sure people aren't doing things they shouldn't do. So that's key for us as well. And then some of the other security tools too, right? So things like antivirus, right? Again, it just sees it as kind of an encrypted blob and it doesn't know what to check for. So granted, it's still protected when they go to protect it and when they unprotect it, but we want that deep integration across the board just to make sure people aren't, you know, doing things they shouldn't do or accidentally doing things they shouldn't do. So some of the considerations, and then I'll wrap this up and let you guys do any questions you have. We're around, I guess these are some of the issues that maybe we stumbled on a little bit or we weren't necessarily expecting. So the first one was around the tracking portal. So we were super geeked about it when we saw it. We thought this could be super powerful. Me as an end user, like when I share documents Microsoft or this and that, like it's kind of cool to be able to see, you know, who opened the document and where they tried to open it. Was it compromised? Things like that. But our European users definitely did not want to be tracked. So they kind of wanted to have their cake and eat it too, because they want the ability to have secure messages. So if they have a grievance or a works council issue, they don't want anyone else to read it, but they don't want to be tracked. So we had to unfortunately turn off the tracking portal for all of our users. We're hoping that there'll be maybe a revocation-only portal at some point, please Microsoft, but we're hoping that's kind of coming. Or potentially an option to be, you know, hey, tracking's turned on for everyone except for people in Germany or in Austria or whatever that is, right? So that may give us an option, but it gets tricky, right? Because you say, okay, well, it's turned off for everyone except these users. Can the people outside of them still track it? Can their internal people still track it? So it's a lot more convoluted. You say, okay, well, what if you just anonymize the data? Well, if I just send it to one person, and then they open it, well, one person is the one person I know. So it's not as easy as it seems to be able to fix that issue. So I think Microsoft's aware of the issue. They're trying to find a good solution. And as we've talked to other customers, they've had the same concern. So I think it's something they're working on. And it's something we're excited to take advantage of when it's ready for our business. But for right now, it's just not something that we could easily deploy just due to regulations. So another one was around kind of the legal and compliance and privacy and security groups. So because we don't have a whole lot of tools like this that are commonly made available to every employee, there was a lot of like, well, wait, what does this do? How does it do that? You know, does it meet this standard? Does it do this? You know, how are we going to open these documents? What if someone's doing something secret that we don't want to know about? And it's kind of educating these different groups about, you know, yeah, there is a way to decrypt it, right? So if you're doing an investigation, you know, put your security agent in the group, and then they can open the documents that they need to. Or if it's legal, hey, when we do your dumps of mailboxes, we can take your PST and we can do bulk decryption on it, things like that. So kind of once you educate these people, they're okay with it, but there was a lot of hurdles internally just to convince them that this is the right thing to do for the company and let them kind of see it. And then they're like, oh yeah, okay, we get it, this makes sense. So it just took a little more time than we expected. The next one was around e-discovery. So that's definitely been a big piece. If you guys haven't heard, GM had a little bit of litigation issues a couple years ago. So we've had a lot of work with our e-discovery team around kind of bulk decryption of files and emails and things like that. So We had some issues along the way. The tools were beta. They're a lot better than they used to be, so that's definitely an issue. But for us, it's just kind of making sure we have all the files 100% of the time and that the performance is good. So I think we're really close to it. I think the tools are there for, you know, everyone else, but for when you just have the huge, massive scale, we have mailboxes that are over 200 gigs, for example. So trying to bulk decrypt a 200 gig mailbox takes a long time, right? So part of it's the technology, part of it's the scaling, part of it's the performance tuning. So it's still something we're working through, but just make sure that you kind of test it, validate it, and you know, maybe your legal department doesn't get down to the metadata like ours does, if you're lucky, but ours get real geeky on that because they're concerned, you know, when they go to court, they need to know every little detail. Hey, did this tool modify the files? You know, because the date on the file or any other metadata on the file can basically, you know, make someone guilty or not, right? So they need to understand kind of all these changes. There's a lot of good information on TechNet about kind of what the logs look like, what, you know, all the other pieces are. It's really well documented, which is great because not all the tools are. So that's definitely been helpful to say, here's what the logs look like for Azure RMS, for example. And here's an example of what the blob storage looks like. So to kind of sell it to them. The next one was around kind of mobile, right? So we talked about before, if you use Outlook Mobile, you're good. If you use Android, you're good. If you use native iOS, still a little bumpy. So hopefully there's a fix coming soon. It sounds like there is to make that a little better. But right now, it's still a little bumpy for those users who use iOS. And the big ones for us is the kind of traveling executive, right? They only have an iPad, and you say, well, sorry, you can't open that till you get back to your PC. And they're like, well, I'll be back to my computer in 2 weeks. So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. And then the last piece I wanted to touch on before wrapping was kind of around support, right? So we've had great engagement from the product group from the beginning. We've had great support from Premier. And I mean, it's good in the fact that we get the same people because, like, the RMS support team isn't a huge group of, like, 5,000 engineers. There's only a handful of people that are supporting this, so I don't have to, like, re-explain my environment and, hey, we do this this way, and this is on-prem, and this is what these servers look like. It's just like, oh, hey, Steve Light, how's it going, man? Cool. I talked to you last week, so this is the new issue. Can you help us out? So it's been really good from that standpoint. From the support side. There's also an extremely active group on Yammer. There's good discussions on TechNet. So it's been helpful for us because we've even found things that, you know, we were thinking about but not necessarily have reported that other people see in Yammer. And, you know, we see Enrique and Tom and other people from the product group right on the spot with answers and supporting and things like that. So they're reaching out to everyone, too. It's not just because we're GM and we're special. On this group, it's active and there's other customers. So, you know, you'll see my comments in there, too. So I think it's a good community that's working together really well. Another thing we found is because we started with this product when it was beta, there's been a lot of fixes along the way. And it hasn't been the kind of old Microsoft where it's, you know, submit a design change request and we'll say no in 6 weeks. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a problem. Okay, we'll fix it. And, like, a couple weeks later, we have a fix, right? And it's like, oh, but you missed this one piece. Okay. You know, another week later, here's your fix. So it's been really good. The engagement has been really good and super fast fixes for us because a critical failure for us can go a long, long way, especially in the client space, right? So if we have an issue with, say, Office and there's a bug or whatever else, we have to stop all our testing, right? We need the fix. We need to integrate to our package. And then we got to test it on, like, hundreds of different types of machines. We got to go through a whole dev, QA, promote to production, pilot. You know, that can take weeks or months for us. So having those quick fixes have been super key to our success to be able to roll it out quickly. And then the last thing is kind of just the willingness to work with different customers, right? Because the Office piece, yeah, everyone uses that, but it's all the other pieces that have been key for us, right? So, you know, hey, GM, what are you guys thinking of where you're going to take this next, right? So what are some things that you think we could do better? How do you think we should tweak this? And it's been both from, you know, meetings we've had as well as stuff that's on the Yammer group, right? There's been kind of receptive to it, and there's been changes that we've suggested have made it into the product. It isn't like, you know, hey, we don't like this button, so we'll just, you know, say too bad, so sad. It's like they took the button away or changed the button, right? So it's been really, really helpful for us to have a product group that's just been really engaged, right? That they're willing to make changes to the product because they know it's going to make the product better, and they're not too good, I guess, to say that, you know, we're not the smartest people in the room. You guys are the customers, so you get it, and be willing to adjust and be flexible. So hopefully that was helpful. We got a few minutes left. I don't know if anyone has any questions. Sure.
Yeah, I do. We've got at least as many employees as you do, probably around 300,000. And there's an on-prem installation of ADRMS that's used mainly by, well, by the board of directors and employees that support them. So every time we think about doing something different with ADRMS and compliance, there's this terror that comes from our internal help desk about how much they're going to get inundated with questions about what's happened to my documents, how does this work now? What was your experience like moving from ADRS on-prem to this hybrid solution? Was support generated?
Yeah, so we had a lot of people, like you said, there's just a handful of people that were using it, but they were using it a lot. And the good thing is, I guess the good and the bad thing is, all the legacy ways of protecting documents are all still in office, right? So if they were doing file, info, protect, you know, all that stuff still looks the same. They can do it exactly the same as they were before. Those reg keys are just redirecting them out to Azure rather than to ADRMS. So people who were using it kind of the old way can continue to use it the old way, but we don't necessarily push that as the way we want our users to use it going forward. Because things like Share Protected is a lot easier to use for end users, right? It's not as geeky as the ADRMS way with the drop-down and options and all that other stuff. It's you hit Share Protected, and it reads the person's email address already in there and says, hey, protecting your attachment, and it's done, right? So we're pushing them towards the kind of more modern way. But for us, we haven't received a ton of calls on things like, hey, I used to be able to do this, and this doesn't work anymore. All that legacy functionality still works. We've had questions from people around, when I was talking in the beginning about, you know, hey, I can do it this way or that way, you know, like, what's the difference kind of thing? So that's when we rejiggered our communications and our training to do scenario-based, because we found out just explaining how the tool works wasn't working for our end users. Going based on those scenarios was really key, that people are like, I get it. And so then they start to adopt it that way. Yeah, so we haven't forced any policies to based on behavior yet or any DLP rules yet, because we're concerned that we're going to inadvertently do something the user's not going to know about, and then the person on the other side is going to say, hey, I didn't get it. Can you send it again to my Gmail or something? We think people will go around it if we do it that way. So we don't force anything, but we think with the Azure Information Protection, when it makes it readily apparent that they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing, and then they can take action upon a creation or things like that, that will be key in that kind of protection. And we also understand that there's a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily need to be protected, right? So if I send the golf outing photos, I don't need to rights protect that, right? So we don't want to put it on all the time. And there's also, it's a heavy touch to rights protect everything all the time, because, you know, it's a little slower to open the first time, it makes it a little harder to open on mobile, you know, that kind of scenario that we don't want to necessarily put it on all the time and just allow users to self-select. Yeah, so we found that if they use the RMS sharing tool, like the Share Protected, it blocks the ability within that agent, if you will, the Office add-in, to send to a Gmail or Yahoo or whatever another account. It has to be a corporate domain. So if they try to type it in, it'll say, sorry, the tool doesn't support it, and they can't even click next. So they can't even fail. It just, they make them backspace. Yeah, yeah. So that's been good. I know there's demand for it because some of our partners, like, you know, the guy who makes bolts down the street, he's bob@gmail.com, right? So blocking it all together, it's good and it's bad. So we're trying to figure out kind of what that looks like. And we've had discussions with Microsoft around, you know, should they enable it? Shouldn't they enable it? But there's not a good answer. So it's been tough for us to kind of recommend one way or another. And a lot of times these small shops, you know, even if you send it to them rights protected, you know, the one guy at the company, he's going to have like a Windows XP machine anyways, right? So it's our core focus is around kind of other big companies like Bosch and Johnson Controls and the other big suppliers we're working on, and then kind of see, okay, how do we trickle down from there? Yeah, so we use a lot of classification in other systems today. So things like in our SharePoint, for example, we have to classify a site upon creation. We have to reattest that the information in the site is confidential or whatever. So people are kind of used to it, right? They understand that they need to classify their documents and their sites and things like that. So by taking it one step further into Office is going to be kind of an easy progression for us because our users understand what these are. Everyone in the company has to take corporate training once a year that explains what all these policies are. So because we've been so rigid on that policy and people know what it is, it's going to be an easy adoption for us. But if you don't have those processes already, people are going to say, I don't know what this means. What's the difference between secret and confidential? Or yeah, yeah. And so when we get closer to kind of we're testing the next iteration of the product now in our lab, and we're getting some feedback from our end users. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, when we deploy to IT, for example, how the adoption is and kind of what people think, right? So we're looking forward to it.
Do you go for classification or not? Is that a good direction for you?
Yeah, I think that's going to be our next step is around the classification because we've got a lot of data today that gets almost kind of orphaned. You know, someone works at the company for 5 years, they leave, and then it's supposed to get deleted based on the information lifecycle management rules, but it doesn't, right? It sits on a file share, it lives in a SharePoint, it whatever. So people are afraid to delete it, right? Because they don't know if it's involved in active litigation or this or that. So then you go to legal and they say, well, we don't know what the content is. You know, IT just told it forever. So we're trying to figure out kind of how we assign ownership, because if it's, you know, not confidential or not secret, then delete it, right? And kind of figure out, once people understand that, hey, the employee tagged it as this, okay, I do need to take extra care, or it's not so important. So I think that tagging for us is going to be key kind of to our next step. We're going towards that way. Maybe talk to me in a year and see how well it worked. But I think that's our current strategy, and our CISO and other people in GM are definitely looking forward to it as well, just to get a good way to get a handle on all this data.
You have a B2B scenario, for example, for norms or standards supply?
So we've looked at B2B. We've done some initial testing in the lab, but when we started to look at it, it wasn't a real product yet. It was still beta. So we haven't done a production B2B yet, but we're definitely considering it. For RMS, because the B2B scenario is, you know, you could assign a license or things like that. It's just, do we want to pay for licenses for creation for the other guy? That's one piece of it. And then the other issue with the B2B that we've seen is there's no kind of clear definition of, are they a kind of viral tenant or are they a fully managed tenant? In B2B, they just look the same, right? So Bosch.com, sure, we get it, right? They're a real company, but what about someone else, right? I can't see as an IT person if it's a real managed company that has an onboarding and offboarding process, or it's just two guys who register their own domain. So that's a challenge for us that before we jump into the big B2B piece, it has to be a little more solid, and there has to be some controls around, sure, we'll trust other fully managed and federated companies, but virals, maybe someone needs to approve them or something like that, so we can take a little more control before we start to like kind of blanket trust these other organizations, because they might be one guy who owns the company and the other guy leaves the company and they never delete his account, right? So we wanted to use it, but we want to use it appropriately. So we're working with the B2B product group on that as well. And there seems to be some other, you know, we've talked to some other customers while we're here, and they're kind of saying the same thing. So hopefully they'll come up with a good answer to it. All right, any other questions? Yeah, so we use a non-Microsoft DLP. It's not WebSense, but it's another one. And right now there's no integration, right? So for RMS specifically, right, it's an encrypted blob. It can't see inside of it to see kind of what people are doing. Exactly. And then we've seen in other Office 365 products as we're evaluating OneDrive, SharePoint, whatever, there just really isn't a whole lot. If you use Microsoft DLP, you're good. If you use anything else, there's not a whole lot. So we've been pushing our vendors to integrate, right? Because it's not like Office 365 just came out, right? And it's not like we're the only company in the world to use it. These guys are at the top right of the Gartner quadrant, right? So it's like, you know, get it together, integrate, or we're going to go to someone else. And that's kind of pushing them to kind of start that integration and actually commit to development to do that integration. What we've seen was with a lot of these other products is they want to do integration from their cloud to Microsoft's cloud rather than kind of an on-premises thing. But they still have to hook back to your on-prem environment to do policies and configuration and things like that. So they're trying to work on this hybrid model. But it's still a little concerning for us because right now we have kind of an ingress and egress point, right? We inspect everything that comes in and out of the company. Well, if you lose that choke point and people access the cloud service from home, for example, you need to now start protecting up there and not just the firewalls, right? So, yeah. So we'll kind of see what the vendors do. But you know we're considering the Microsoft DLP and some of the other products, which it's attractive, right? You already own it, things like that. But the struggle for us is that it doesn't do everything our existing products do, and there's a lot of investment in the existing tools and products that it's hard for those groups to just kind of say, okay, we'll walk away from vendor A and just go all in Microsoft. Because sure, in Microsoft land, it's great, you know. But what about Max? But what about all these Siemens tools? And what about this and that? They're not quite there yet, so it's tough. Yeah. Okay. Sure. So for mobile encryption, yeah, we use RMS as kind of the preferred standard. We were doing other forms of encryption, but they're clunky, right? So. Certificate stuff is just, yeah, exactly. So there's very limited use of S/MIME still, and we strongly discourage it. And it was a lot of our European users because they had a grievance or this or that that they wanted to make sure it was protected, but no mobile support, no this, no that. And because we're on-prem, we can't necessarily take advantage of some of the other Office 365 encryption components, but even those are still, I think they're just okay. They're not great. Yeah. So right now, the preferred method is RMS, yeah. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you all very much for coming. I know it's Friday, and everyone's looking to get out of here, so I appreciate your time. Thank you.